Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. It's a big news day in the NFL with possible expansion to the playoffs and expansion to the regular season on the docket. And to help us talk about that, we're going to bring in an expert. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN joins us now by phone. Jeremy, thanks for taking time to come on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
So when you see what's going on right now in discussions regarding the CBA between the NFL and the NFLPA and the potential expansion to 17 games in the regular season, as well as expanding the playoffs to another team, making the playoffs in each conference, what's your initial reaction to all this?
Well, it shows how far down the road these negotiations are. Where things could realistically get done today. It all comes down to Friday and the vote with the players and the players' reps, and they're going to have a conference call. If they get the votes they needed, this could go down rather quickly. If they don't, this could lag on. But the playoff format you mentioned, everybody's been pretty comfortable with that, to be honest. Two more teams get in the playoffs. There's been no real issue with that. The issue is the 17th game in how you distribute revenue. You know, it looks like the players can go from like 47% revenue to closer to 50. That might not be done. I know a big concern now for Friday's call is getting on the same page with the money and what it's going to mean for people already under contract. Do they get, you know, 1/17th more, an extra game check for an extra game? How does all that work? So they need to get clarity on all that and then vote on it. But, you know, as a betting man, I think this will go down, and there will be a new CBA before mid-March when free agency starts.
Are you surprised at all by that, Jeremy? I know early when the 17th game was floated, I know around here there were some Tennessee Titans, Logan Ryan in particular, very outspoken about, you know, not liking the idea and, you know, believing that, you know, it does not speak well of the NFL's supposed commitment to player safety. I understand, you know, enough money is going to change minds,
sure.
but I'm frankly a little surprised that we're this close all of a sudden.
Right, and that's why the vote could maybe go either way, and not everybody has a full handle on how this is going to go down this week. I think that's the issue because of this game hanging over everybody. And you got to consider that's an extra game potentially for a team that would be normally a two seed or a team that would get a bye. There might only be one bye now, according to reports, and so you're sitting there playing an extra playoff game potentially. So there's a lot involved, and this is leverage for the players to try to get the benefits out of that, one of which is going to be, bigger salaries for the minimum. You know, the minimum salary right now is like $510,000, I think, so they're working to get that higher. A key is long-term health care. You know, I don't know they're going to get that or not, but that's probably on the docket for the next few days as well of what they can get out of that in exchange, along with the extra money. So there are some benefits in play that are good. I think a lot of players will say, hey, if they're going to pay me more, I'll play the extra game. But that affects people in different ways, whether you're a veteran or you're just coming up or you're passionate about the game and the safety component. So that's why this is such a wild card from a voting standpoint, and the league needs to make it work the players' while.
Jeremy, you're well connected throughout the NFL, but obviously cover the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. What have you made of this Myles Garrett situation regarding Mason Rudolph and then Mike Tomlin's response to the allegations that Myles Garrett threw out there?
Well, I'm kind of torn on it, to be honest, because you want, you know, especially in my profession, you want players to speak honestly and be revealing and all those things, you know. So I'll never knock somebody for that. But for Mike Tomlin to come out the way he did, so strongly in a statement and on ESPN's First Take and denounce all this and say that he's, quote, hacked off, speaks to how ludicrous the Steelers think this all is. You know, it was not corroborated at all. Nobody was really talking about it after the game. The NFL did their investigation, that you still bring it up 3-4 months later. So that's the major issue that the Steelers have. And I will say this, I know from what I've heard, there are people in the Browns building that don't necessarily believe Myles Garrett. You know, that's sort of the rub here, is like, why is this being brought back up? But, it's something that will make – it will probably dissipate here soon because, I don't want to speculate on lawsuits, but I wouldn't imagine Mason Rudolph is going to file one for a suit for defamation. considering his head coach came out and sort of helped his cause. Now, if it doesn't go away, maybe he will. But until then, I would suspect the Browns and Steelers could be playing week one on a primetime game of sorts.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, this is already, you know, an intense situation between these franchises. And how do you think this plays out, or what do you think the impact is, you know, on the field next year?
Well, the good news is for the Steelers and the Browns probably is that Mason Rudolph most likely won't be playing. You know, so he can avoid that headache, and Big Ben will most likely be in there. All signs are good that the Steelers feel he'll be able to recover. Now, he's a long way off from that, but they feel like by the summertime, you know, he'll be throwing the football and things will be pretty good overall. And so, you know, kind of quells the tension a little bit in that way. But, you know, you still have a lot of the dynamics in play. And you know, these teams, this could get to a point where it's Bengals-Steelers. You know, the Bengals are down now. If you recall 3 or 4 years ago, that was the most heated matchup in the NFL. This could overtake that. The AFC North always has one good one. You know, it usually involves Pittsburgh. And so I think Cleveland-Pittsburgh might be that matchup this year.
Jeremy Fowler from ESPN on the line with us. And, Jeremy, you came out with a great article yesterday talking to league executives about some specific players that are free agents. And obviously a guy that's very popular around here is Marcus Mariota. What's kind of your sense on what his value could be from a league-wide perspective and maybe what his future could look like in the NFL?
Well, you know, I think he's going to implement the Ryan Tannehill formula, you know, the guy that essentially got him benched, and go to a team where he has a pretty good chance to play. But, you know, he's not going to get, my understanding at least, is he most likely won't get a huge contract of starter's money, but I think he will get a very good contract and will have a strong market, either bridge starter or high-level backup. That's probably the sweet spot. But even you look at a team like Chicago, everybody says that Mariota would be a great fit there because, you know, with Matt Nagy's offense, you need a mobile guy. He's kind of similar to Mitch Trubisky. They don't have a ton of cap space, and they're going to have to pay up for a guy like Marcus. I think he's going to wait it out a little bit. I don't think he's going to jump at the first offer. Is my understanding, he wants to see how the quarterback dominoes fall. Very small chance he returns to Tennessee. I just don't see that. And so, you know, he's going to be a guy who will be coveted, but not the way you would think he would have been 5 years ago when he was drafted second overall. You know, it's just a different landscape, and, you know, he might have to come in somewhere where there are two, you know, quarterbacks that can start but are sort of bridge options or high-level backups, and he can either compete or knowing that he might get in if the starter struggles.
Speaking of coveted, Jeremy, you talked about, you know, you wrote about Jack Conklin also, you know, and you quoted an AFC exec. The quote, he's back now, you know, had a really strong contract year. And, of course, people around here saw that up close. Conklin really bounced back. You wrote, Conklin should be Cleveland's first call come mid-March. Lots of cap space for the Browns. I imagine other teams will be interested. What do you think the market will be for him, and how do you envision that playing out?
Yeah, I mean, tackles get paid, man. They almost always do, good ones, you know. And so Trent Brown, you know, with Oakland, who wasn't like considered a top five tackle, you know, undisputedly got 16 whatever million dollars a year it was in free agency from Oakland, and so that bodes well for Jack Conklin. He's going to get a huge contract. A team like Cleveland, who desperately needs to protect Baker Mayfield, really had a patchwork tackle lineup. You know, they had Chris Hubbard, who's a decent player but a journeyman and kind of a swing tackle. And then Greg Robinson, who just got busted for 157 pounds of marijuana on the Mexico border, El Paso border. And so that speaks volumes to what they need right now. Not, you know, Odell Beckham, to me, is not the problem there. It's protecting Baker Mayfield and then maybe getting like a tight end. And so that's why I see Cleveland as a natural spot there. You know, Washington probably needs to spend a little bit on their line. They're going to lose Brandon Scherf at guard most likely. Trent Williams has been out for the year and doesn't want to play for Washington anymore. And so that could be an NFL fit as well.
ESPN senior NFL writer Jeremy Fowler has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Jeremy, thanks for coming on with us, man. We really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Have a good day. This segment was brought to you by Holly Gerenzen, your local Geico agent on Rosa Parks Boulevard. Holly can help you out with your car, home, motorcycle, boat, and RV insurance. Located at 2120 Rosa Parks Boulevard. Think local, buy local with Geico. Interesting stuff there, Joe. And, you know, I haven't really thought about Cleveland being a potential destination and landing spot for Jack Conklin. But when you think about it, especially given the news that we just talked about with Robinson, it makes a lot of sense because I think the league took notice of Jack Conklin the year that he had. There were a ton of question marks coming into the year about how he was going to respond coming off the injury. He was finally healthy and feeling like himself again. Could he get back to the Jack Conklin that we grew accustomed to watching in the first couple years? And the answer largely was yes. So it's going to be really interesting to see how not only the Titans handle this situation, but how interested is Jack Conklin in what his value is going to be around the league. Something I think really interesting to keep an eye on.
Cleveland is closer to home. Conklin's from Michigan. It's also interesting when you think about, so Greg Robinson, you got 157 pounds. And then I think back to draft night when we got to see Laremy Tunsil in the gas mask. There's like Weed and Conklin's, you know, landing spots seem to
They're
have.
Intersecting.
Yeah, they seem to have something to do with each other. So I don't know, man.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
But, yeah, I think Jack Conklin wants to be here. You know, he started to raise his daughter here. He's been here his whole career. I think he really likes, you know, the organization and the locker room. And those things are, I think, certainly going to be factors in this. No doubt about it.
When we come back, we'll discuss some more potential landing spots for NFL free agents and how that's going to affect the Tennessee Titans this upcoming season. You're listening to Morning Drive. This is Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, we had Jeremy Fowler on from ESPN in our last segment and was talking about his article where he reached out to some NFL executives and just talked about specific players and what their value is around the league and maybe how they are viewed amongst some high-level executives in the NFL. And the interesting one to me that we didn't get to with Jeremy was Jameis Winston. And, look, we've talked about Jameis Winston being a member of the 30-30 club in Tampa, 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions, the high-risk, high-reward that comes along with his play. And an executive in Fowler's article is quoted as saying, quote, "He knows the Bucs system. He showed when healthy. He provides the opportunity to win games. And he's in the ideal offense for him. They're a vertical of passing team, second-level type reads. That's why you see explosive plays and aggressiveness, which lends itself to at least some turnovers. Jameis has that Ben Roethlisberger mentality. So if they cut down on the turnovers significantly, they can win games with him," end quote. I think most people would agree, if Winston cuts down on his turnovers, that they can win games with him. The talent is there. The question is, I mean, he's been turning the ball over his entire career. At this point, I mean, I think it's way too much of a risk to just assume at some point those turnovers are magically going to get cut down. I mean, he's not going to throw 30 picks every year, but he's always going to be a guy who turns the ball over. That's just how he plays the game.
Yeah, and that's fine if it's not 30. I mean, some of the picks this year,
just brutal.
Yeah, it's just like, how could you not see the linebacker making a drop right there? It was the easiest pick he's ever had in his life. That's the thing. It wasn't all downfield, aggressive, you know, just, hey, sometimes you're going to throw one up to Mike Evans and just assume he'll make the play. Sure, some of those are going to happen because of how they want to play, but it's the simple plays that are just like, what are you doing, that are disturbing. Then again, man, 5,000 yards, also 30 TDs. So apparently, according to Fowler's article, a lot of people around the league expect some kind of a tag on him, which I think makes sense.
I think so, too.
You know, for him, it's, you know, and I mean, it's one of those things, like, we always compared Winston and Mariota, right? I mean, yeah. I would say going into last year, I mean, I would give the edge to Mariota. You know, not as much production, but not nearly as many mistakes either. And I think Mariota could have been, like, I thought this year might be a tag year for him, depending on how things went. And it looks like it's kind of gone that way for Winston. I guess, you know, the question is how much of, like, his success, because sometimes we look at a Tom Brady or whoever last year and say, gosh, look who he was throwing to. Well, Winston throws to good guys.
Yeah. You know? Godwin, Evans.
So, you know, how much of that do you – you know, do you take away credit from him for that? I don't know. But he's a talent. There's no doubt about it. And he did have the LASIK eye surgery, Robbie. So
I'm always going to go back to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think NFL execs, they need to keep that in mind.
You know, maybe, hey, I mean, it's amazing, actually. I mean, it's funny and it'll be like a joke all year. But, like, how could you have just done that
Like,
now?
How is that just now happening? After I drafted him, that would have been – I mean, and Jimbo Fisher talked about this when he had him at Florida State.
The team should pay for it immediately.
Yeah, I mean – when you could see what color of uniform the team is wearing that you're throwing the ball in the general direction of, it's probably going to help you as a quarterback.
And is it, he was farsighted? Is that correct?
I think he's nearsighted.
Oh, he's nearsighted. Okay.
Yeah. So, right, so you could see how that might be an issue, throwing the ball
as
a quarterback.
I mean, either one could be an issue, yeah. I guess. But, yeah. So, I don't know. He's really going to be interesting. I mean, Bruce Arians, his tone changed a lot during the course of the year. It was fiercely defending him, like, after every pick for a while. And it was like, nah, that one wasn't his fault, and that one wasn't his fault. And then by the end, it was like, kind of throwing his hands
this
up.
Guy?
Yeah, so. But, hey, it's a really explosive offense with him and those guys, you know. And you can run that back and just cut down some of the really ridiculous ones, and they could have something.
The sense I got from Jeremy Fowler, and I think the sense, the more I read and the more – I look at people's opinions on this. I think this is the popular sense. This proposed deal under the CBA, expanding the regular season to 17 games, eliminating one preseason game and making it three instead of four, and expanding the playoffs where one additional team from East Conference gets in. I mean, I think most people think it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to happen at this point. I think Jeremy Fowler had a similar answer that, you know, obviously the players – are going to have something to say about this, but most people expect this to get done. I'm a little bit surprised by how quickly all of this has come together, especially the 17-game part of it in the regular season, and that the players, I understand money is going to be a huge part of this, but that they're so willing to adapt this so quickly because they've been so strongly opposed to it for the most part.
Well, we'll see, though. I mean, like Jeremy said, let's see how the vote comes out. I know there are some guys who are strongly opposed to it.
But how much does the percentage shift that we talked about earlier, going from 47% to 48.5%, translating to roughly $5 billion, that's a whole lot of money you're talking about going into the pocket of the players.
Sure, sure. And, I mean, there's more off-season stuff apparently. You know, I think another thing is the taking marijuana and you know, making that something that's not, you know, not even potentially not tested for.
Maybe not 157 pounds worth.
That would be probably a little bit much. That would be. But, you know, I mean, really, that's a big thing in this league for guys, especially when you talk about the pushing of you know, painkillers and things like that that have really messed people up.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of other things here along with money that you could say, you know, contribute to more emphasis on player health and safety. But I still, I really am eager to see the results of the vote because that extra game is, and as Jeremy Fowler pointed out, a particular team could have that extra game and then could also have to play first week of the playoffs when in the past system they wouldn't have. So that would actually be, you know, two extra games for a particular team. So I'm still skeptical that the players are going to go with this, but we'll see.
Do you worry at all? Because this is my biggest concern with the playoff format. And, you know, Jeremy brought this up earlier in the show that, you know, this hasn't really been met with much resistance from the side of the players in terms of expanding the playoffs and adding an additional team in each conference. I look at leagues like the NBA and, you know, worry about maybe watering down your product because, I mean, the NBA is a lot different than the NFL from the standpoint of if you're not a top three or four seed, I mean, you're not going to win the championship. We had somebody text in earlier and say that it's happened one time in the history of the NBA, and that was in 94-95 with the Houston Rockets when a seed lower than the 4 seed, and in this case I think it was the 6 seed with the Rockets, they won the NBA championship. We see wild card teams every now and then make it to the Super Bowl. We've seen wild card teams win the Super Bowl. Heck, the Titans were a wild card team when they made it to the Super Bowl.
Right.
I don't think the one extra team would water it down that much. This is the last time I want to have a conversation about expanding the playoffs, though. This has got to be it for me.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I like the system as it is. It's just like adding one team on each side, it doesn't disrupt it too much. I don't hate it. I mean, frankly, I don't hate the idea of a triple header on Saturday and Sunday of,
sure don't.
You know, wild card weekend. It sounds pretty good. You know, what I hate is the 17th regular season game. I hate that. And again, take it away from the player safety issue. Just take it to, you know, single season statistical records, you know. I mean, now that's changed. This has been 16 games since the mid-70s. And so certain things are, you know, the 2,000-yard season means something. I mean, there are certain benchmarks that you can measure yourself against, and now this throws that off. And it's
passing, you know, touchdown record in a season.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff. You know, the sack record. Look at what a huge deal the whole sack record was with Michael Strahan.
Yep.
And so, I mean, that's not the primary reason. But as a fan, I don't see why anyone would really want that. And then, you know, apparently it's dead. The idea of they'll only play 16 games, you certainly can't do that. I mean, that is, now you are messing with, in a product that does not have a lot of games, you're messing with a particular day at the stadium where you're giving fans crap. You're giving them a bad preseason game instead of an actual game, you know?
Yeah, that can't happen. I mean, no. You can't even, I don't even know why they're entertaining that thought.
I mean, I think that was one potential answer to the player safety part of it. Like, okay,
right,
well, then
really
you
an
will
answer,
only
like,
play. No, I think it's dumb. I think it's all dumb, but I can say it's all dumb, and then someone will say, well, look how much more money it means to have one extra game. I'm like, well, all right.
One part of this that I think could be very interesting is the bye, and only one team in each conference having a bye into the playoffs through the first round. You know, a lot of times at the end of the season, and I think this was the case this year again with the Ravens, I mean, your bye is wrapped up in that final week, and it leads to, you know, a lot of players getting rested the last game of the season. With just one team getting that first round bye, I think it could make the last week of the season extremely meaningful. And that's part of that, may be the positive that I take away from this situation. When you combine the 17 game regular season with the playoff format that they're discussing, I think that one team only getting the first round bye in each conference, that can make a huge difference in terms of the competitive level in the last week.
Well, but this year it wouldn't have. So this year, the Ravens have it, and that's it. So nobody else is – I mean, really, everybody else is like, okay, we're all playing the first weekend. Instead, what we saw was – I mean, I was in Houston with the Titans in the early game watching the Patriots shock – or the Dolphins shock the Patriots in the road,
yep.
And all of a sudden Kansas City's playing for home field, and I think that you could definitely argue that created a champion. And in this system, none of those games mean anything.
Yep.
It's just who's playing who in the first weekend. So, but I mean, in different weeks or in different years, it could mean different things. But to me, if you have two up for grabs, I would think that you would have more chances for more games to matter at the end.
When we come back, it's been an interesting year in college basketball. How do we think college basketball has been affected by not really having a Zion Williamson-like figure in the game? Joe Rexroad and I will discuss that next. You're listening to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Drake Hills from the Tennessean scheduled to join us at 8:45. Hal Gill from the Preds Radio Network scheduled to join us at 9:30. Looking forward to those two guys showing up and talking a little soccer and a little hockey with us. But first, Joe, it's been an interesting year to watch in college basketball because there's not really that one great dominant team. And when you look at the star power in college basketball, there are some great players. There are some really nice players to watch and fun players to watch. Even on Tennessee, I mean, Vescovi has been a really fun player to watch. But there's not that one centric figure like there was last year with Zion Williamson at Duke. And look, Ja Morant, I think, is super talented, but playing at Murray State last year, there just weren't a whole lot of eyeballs on him all the time. How much do you think college basketball right now is suffering from not having that guy like Zion who attracts maybe your casual sports fan, your casual viewer to the game?
Well, I guess I need some information on how much did it matter last year that Zion.
I think the Duke games are pretty highly rated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people took interest in watching him play.
Yeah, I mean, look, Zion was he was a special case, no doubt about it. And you're right, there's probably some casual fans who drifted to a Duke game because of him. I mean, I don't know. I go through the years, I'm trying to think of other players who, you know, actually would have helped the sport because they were so good. Like Anthony Davis was an unbelievable player of the year. They won it all. Did people tune in to what?
Not really.
There are occasionally really entertaining, like Jimmer Fredette, okay?
Yeah.
He was fun to watch, but like BYU Steph games Curry, and blowing
Davidson,
up the ratings.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like when you have a Steph Curry or a Ja Morant, like Ja Morant last year, I remember, you know, they played Belmont, and I think it was like on ESPN2, so it was like, here's everybody's chance to see Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. And then he actually had a messed up ankle and could barely play in the game. So a lot of people are probably like, wait, what's the big deal with this guy? But that was, you know, the opportunity to watch Ja Morant. There aren't many, you know, for the mid-major program. So I don't know. I think college basketball, unfortunately, because I'm a huge college basketball guy, unfortunately, I think it's very much people wait till they fill out their brackets to watch and care about it. And I think this year, you not only step down from you don't have a guy like Zion. You know, you don't have a player like that. People are like, "Ooh, I got to see this guy play." You also just have a really watered down kind of parity filled year where the number one team is Baylor,
right?
And a lot of people out there, most people probably couldn't name a player on Baylor. You know, San Diego State is going to get a one seed; they're undefeated. A lot of people probably couldn't name a player on San Diego State, although Vanderbilt fans could name Yanni Wetzel, who should be playing here, and instead is a really key part of a great team. So it's also a weird year. You're losing that star power, and then you just, you know, you don't have the great teams. I mean, Duke's really good, but they're also, like, talent-wise,
right,
they're significantly less than they were last year. They could still win it all. A lot of teams could win it all. I think that's fun and interesting, but a lot of people don't. And it's too bad because I love college basketball, and I think they've done a good job of increasing interest with some of their early season stuff. They've tried to make more big games early. Mm-hmm. Like, I think around the holidays, it's great. But a lot of people this time of year aren't that into it. I think this is also, to our last discussion, the NFL, part of this 17 game is they're going to start at the same time. They're going to stretch it. And their idea is, look at February and the opportunity to have more inventory in February, you know, to where, like, the Super Bowl would now be late February.
Right.
You know, so right now, the NFL season would still be going on, I guess. Although that's also interesting when you talk about the timeline with the combine and everything like that. Maybe it just goes boom, boom, Super Bowl, combine.
Yeah, and that's certainly something that'll be interesting to watch. I think in terms of college basketball, I freely admit, like, that's me. Like, I would much prefer college basketball to have a year like last year where Zion's in there and you've got somebody on a nightly basis that pretty much is appointment television. Like, I don't care one way or the other about Duke. I know a lot of people hate Duke. I don't really have strong feelings on Duke one way or the other, but I would watch Zion play in those games just because I knew what a talent he was and I knew what a player he was going to be in the NBA. And so far, so good for Zion's career in the NBA. From this standpoint, I'm excited about college basketball and the way that it's kind of taken shape this year. And that is once we do get to the tournament, because the tournament, I think most everyone would agree, is one of the most exciting things in sports every year. But usually in the tournament, there is a group of 4, 5, 6 elite teams that you look at and say, okay, more likely than not, these are the teams that are going to be able to win a national championship. This year, there's not really a ton of those elite teams, which I think could make for a really exciting tournament, and I think even more of an unpredictable tournament than we normally get on a yearly basis, which, as we know, if you've ever filled out a bracket, it's already extremely unpredictable.
Yeah, so this will actually end up being the year like all four number one seeds
get to the final four, yeah.
But yeah.
Chalk.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's I think it's an interesting year. And, you know, the Zion thing, like, I'm going back and trying to think back of, like, how many players were like that. It's so few. I guess Kevin Durant, the year he played for Texas.
And Carmelo Anthony back in the day.
Yeah,
Syracuse,
so now you're going back to, you know, you're going back to 2003. You know, you're going back to 02-03. I mean, there's a lot of great players. Like Blake Griffin with Oklahoma was, you know, was a player like that. But it's very rare. I mean, again, I think Zion, we'll see. Health, I think he's got to probably shed a couple pounds. I mean, I think he could be, you know, just a great player for a long time in the NBA. It's not many times can you go through college basketball and say that guy is going to be a great player in the NBA for a long time. But I think he's that good. But he's just the entertainment value with him was off the charts. Most years, that's not what it is. So most years, it's somewhat like this, where, yeah, a lot of people just are tuned out, unfortunately. And again, I keep saying this over and over again, because in this state in particular, you've got, you know, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Memphis, but you've also got great programs around here. You know,
Belmont.
Yeah, Belmont, Lipscomb is coming on. I mean, TSU's coming on. Austin Peay right now is a great story this year. Going to be writing about them soon, by the way, at theathletic.com. You know, I mean, they are right now in the fight. It might be Austin Peay at Murray State for the championship of the OVC. Middle Tennessee, hard times now, but what a great run they had with Kermit Davis.
Right.
You know, beating Michigan State, you know, the 15-2, one of the biggest upsets in NCAA tournament history, and, you know, beating Big Ten teams 2 years in a row in the NCAA tournament. There's a lot of great basketball. And the Lady Vols, I think, are going to come back under Kelly Harper and I think have a chance to be up there again. I still think that program has the recruiting clout to do that. So we should love basketball more here in this state. Be more like Kentucky in that way, okay?
Wow.
In that way alone, be more like Kentucky.
That may be the first time that anybody in Tennessee has ever said that, is to be more like Kentucky.
I mean, look, I'm not saying trade whiskey for bourbon. I'm just saying, you know, the love for basketball here. We have great, great basketball. So give it a little bit more love.
You know, when you look at the world – and the NFL part of this discussion is really interesting to me, because you're right. I mean, the Super Bowl is over with the first week of February, and this is right when, you know, conference races in college basketball are starting to heat up, right before the conference tournaments, right before the start of the NCAA tournament. And this is the time where I think if you're maybe a casual sports fan, and obviously the NFL is the top dog for you, you're kind of looking for that next thing after. People choose their different things. Like some people choose to start watching the NBA when the NFL is over. Some people choose to really get invested in the NHL when the NFL is over. But some people go the college basketball route with that. How much do you think the NFL expanding their season, expanding the playoffs, and dragging this thing out further into February is going to hurt college basketball? Because I think it's going to be a pretty significant blow to them.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, obviously this would be the postseason, and so you'd be getting down to very few teams left, and you'd be talking about just Sundays at this point. So, you know, I mean, college basketball
But still, the sports conversation all week long leading up to those Sundays is not going to be about college basketball. It's going to be about the upcoming games in the NFL.
Yeah, but, I mean, what are we talking about now? What have we been talking about all day today? We've been talking about the NFL, right?
I know.
So, I mean, like – I think it already overshadows everything. Yeah, certainly like ratings on Sundays. And, yeah, a little bit more of the conversation. I think if you love college basketball, you still can sit there and watch great games, you know, every day of the week, really. You can find a good game to watch every day of the week. If you love the NHL, I mean, you still, you know, you've got games all week long. Yeah, I don't know. I think the NFL, it's incredible how they dominate the discussion 365, really. I mean, they really do. Like, imagine in any other sport, I mean, the drafts of other sports get a little bit of attention, right?
Yeah.
You get some coverage of all the other drafts. I mean, the NBA draft is a bigger deal, but like baseball and hockey, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, people cover the draft. I mean, imagine like a combine in preparation for a draft getting covered at all right. in any other sport. It'll never happen. The NFL, next week, we're all going to be in Indy for the whole week, and it's like prime time television yeah. now. I mean, so it already...
As Darren McFarland says, the underwear Olympics next week.
Exactly. So it already dominates the discussion, and now it's just a matter of, you know, I guess they could just have some more weekends where they dominate the ratings, which if you want to talk about something getting hurt, by the way, you know, anybody who mm-hmm. wants the XFL to succeed, I mean, it would not be good for the XFL for the NFL to be extending into late February.
Last thing real quickly on the Zion part of this discussion. It makes me think back to what would college basketball have been like back in the day if Kobe went to college for 1 year, if LeBron went to college for 1 year, and to watch those two guys specifically. Because I think a lot of people view Zion as potentially one day maybe being in a category like that. It just that gets me thinking, like, what would it have been like if LeBron had to go to college for 1 year and what that could have done for the sport.
Yeah, well, and I'm old enough to remember when even guys who were, like, good enough to be in the NBA still played, like, 4 years in college. Yeah. I watched Patrick Ewing play all 4 years. I watched Ralph Sampson play all 4 years. Larry Johnson, Christian Laettner, you know, Tim Duncan. And that's what it used to be. It used to be a rarity for a guy to leave. So it was, yeah, it was much better, frankly. But, you know, I still think – there's still a lot of good players and good teams, but it's been watered down. If the NBA changes the rule, mm-hmm. as they may do, now, you know, the Zions of the world will not be spending a year at a chosen college. They'll be gone. What will that do to the sport? I know some people will say not good for the sport, and I agree, you know, but I also think if you're a college basketball fan, a lot of it is the front of the jersey. You know, yeah. you still have that passion. Like Kentucky fans, they're going to pack Rupp even if they don't have – a roster full of guys who are going to be in the NBA right. the following year.
When we come back, Nashville SC ended their preseason yesterday in a 1-1 draw, and now we look ahead to the regular season, the inaugural MLS season for Nashville SC. To help us do that, Drake Hills from the Tennessean will join us next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. It's almost soccer time. In Tennessee, Nashville SC is set to begin their inaugural MLS season. And to help us talk more about that, we bring in our good buddy Drake Hills from the Tennessee. And Drake, how's it going, man?
Oh, man, I'm just enjoying my last day in this humid but very sunny Florida weather. You know, last day of preseason, Nashville, they're doing a bit of a recovery training session today, and they'll be heading back to Nashville tomorrow morning.
Well, let me tell you, you should enjoy it because the weather here is not good, my friend.
Snow today.
Yeah, I heard something about snow this morning. I was like, oh, you know, I might just try to postpone my return just a little bit, if you know what I mean.
It's probably a good idea. So, Drake, Nashville SC and DC United with a 1-1 draw last night to close out the preseason. What's been your vantage point of what's been accomplished and what they've been looking to build on this preseason? And what are the reports you're hearing from Nashville SC about where their confidence level is heading into the regular season now here in just over a week?
Well, starting with the latter, I think their confidence level, or at least in particular parts of the field, you take a look at the defensive third. Obviously, Walker Zimmerman is a big signing. We all heard about this last week. And he debuted yesterday, and you could see that he and Dave Romney were quite a natural fit in central defense yesterday against DC, albeit for the, I guess you could say, for 60 minutes, it was against a younger, less experienced side. A lot of academy players from DC United, a lot of younger players. However, Walker Zimmerman and Romney got a chance to go up against the likes of Julian Gressel, who many in the South and Atlanta will know from his time at Atlanta United. They came on, Ola Kamara came on, and they got a chance to go up against some of the big guys, and they did pretty well. So central defense is probably going to be their strongest and what they're most sure of themselves. Even in the midfield, I think Anibal Godoy and Dax McCarty, just going up through the middle of the field is probably going to be where their confidence lies. Obviously, they've had games where they've scored 4 goals. They've had games where they've scored 3 goals. They've had a game where they've scored 1 goal, obviously from yesterday, and then against Chicago Fire as well. So the goal production is probably where they are still a bit questionable. Not only from their side, they want to see that progress a little bit, but also from my own eyesight. I mean, looking up at, you know, how they did against the younger side, how they did against the older side, they were not necessarily much different. If you take a look at guys like Abu Dunladi, who was able to create one chance, and Gary Smith was saying that once the older group came on for DC United, Abu was the one who created the real only promising chance on goal in the second half. But in that first half, they weren't necessarily testing Chris Seitz much, other than that PK that they earned, and obviously beating him for the goal. So there's a bit of work to do in that regard, but their confidence level has most certainly risen throughout this preseason, particularly in possession, but also central defense and in central midfield.
So, Drake, what is your confidence level? You've been around this team, watch it play a lot. You have a good feel for the MLS. For MLS, I've been told. I got to stop saying the MLS.
Yeah,
it's just
MLS.
For MLS.
Yeah, get it right.
I know, man.
You've been
believe
in business for too long.
Man, seriously, I mean, I'm going to need to be sitting next to you in the press box and having you correct me constantly on saying non-soccer things. what is your confidence level that this team can be competitive in MLS right away?
And that was actually the word that I was going to use, is competitive. This team can compete. Now, if you're going to ask me if they were going to win, I'm not going to say that, you know, this team is going to be struggling for 3 points every single game. I think that's far from the truth. However, this team, again, the goal production needs to increase for there to be a good chance that this team can put in a playoff push. The season hasn't even started yet. But if we were to have too early of a prediction, it would be that they would be on the fringes of a playoff spot if they were to increase their goal production, have someone up front that can be consistent. However, this team will be competitive, especially at home. I mean, the game against Atlanta, you know, you couldn't have picked a better matchup. Atlanta has obviously done well in the final third since they even got to MLS, whether it be with Justin Martinez, some of the other players that they picked up over the past couple of years. Nashville is in a competitive state. They've got the quality all around the field. They've got national team guys, not only just for the U.S. national team, but from the Panama national team, the Costa Rica national team, the Honduras national team. So they've got good quality. It's just it comes to the point where, and you have to make sure that you make it count in the final third.
Drake Hills, the Nashville SC beat writer for the Tennessean, on the line with us. And, Drake, you've mentioned in the past how the identity this group is going to try to play to is possessing the ball and making sure that they're strong defensively. It's one thing to say that that's the identity you want to play to, but how equipped is this group to play that way all season long and use that identity and that formula to be competitive in their first year?
Well, from what I've seen in the past week, they went up against FC Cincinnati on Sunday, and I think that was my first chance of seeing how well this team has come, how far this team has come in this high press system. I mean, as soon as you get the ball, they're jumping on you. They're going up the field. Teams will try to compact and stay in their own zone and be able to try to defend in that regard. But Gary Smith, the head coach, he's been very clear on this high press system and getting up the field, making sure that the opposing team's center backs, the opposing team's defensive back line, that they're under pressure at all times when they're under possession. And as a matter of fact, that's where Nashville's goal came from last night, was in a high-pressing situation. They played it out. DC played it out of the back. A guy basically was dispossessed. Derek Jones picks it up for Nashville. He beats one defender, gets brought down in the box. Hani Mukhtar converts, and there's your goal in the 12th minute. That's how Nashville wants to play. They want to have the ball, but if they don't, that high press system is as good as you can get at this point in the season. It's not perfect. They've still got to be able to have everybody on the same page. But you got to think. I mean, this team has started from January 20th, and here we are February 20th, and you know, they've got their foundation essentially in a firm state. They know who they are. tactically. They know who they are from their foundation. They know who they are on the ball. They know who they are in defense. They know who they are on the midfield. It's just a matter of getting those goals.
Being around this team, Drake, do you notice, have you noticed a difference from before when all we're talking about in this city is the stadium situation and now that everyone can kind of move forward? I mean, have you seen that translate to them?
Yeah, so I've asked them about that. I actually talked to Daniel Lovitz and Dax McCarty and a few of the other guys on Monday, and it was, you know, some were pretty much they were pretty much abstaining from feeling on a high or feeling on a low at any point in time during the stadium negotiations. Dax McCarty was actually probably the most direct in saying, you know, hey, forget all of that. Now we're trying to make sure that this team is actually ready to go February 29th. And he was very, he insisted that that was not necessarily something that they were thinking about in any regard, any point during preseason, because they had so much work to do. However, someone like Daniel Lovitz was talking about that he feels like this is probably a tougher preseason psychologically, but also physically, because you know they're going through putting all the pieces together on the field, but there hasn't been a club in MLS that's had this two front war, if you want to put it that way, with obviously the CBA that's affected pretty much everybody affiliated with the game in this country, but also this is the only team that's been fighting for a stadium in MLS at the moment. Obviously, with Miami, it's still got their thing, but there hasn't been a threat or Commissioner Don Garber coming down to Nashville and having to put some extra emphasis on getting this deal done. And so Nashville is in a unique state in that regard, and Daniel Lovitz was one to point that out. And then Joe Willis, the goalkeeper, he said that, you know, hey, I always knew that this stadium deal was going to get done. That was his answer right off the bat. So you've got different perspectives on the team, but holistically, this team has been in a very consistent state of trying to stay focused and putting all these pieces together because they have so much work to do.
Drake Hills covers Nashville SC for the Tennessean, has been our guest. Drake, thanks so much for joining us this morning, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll see you guys soon.
All right, good stuff, Drake.
Enjoy the warmth. So, Joe, I think it's interesting. And look, their first game is coming up February 29th at Nissan Stadium at 7 o'clock. That identity that they want to play with, you know, the press that he was talking about there, making sure defensively they're all over other teams. I think that's the way you kind of have to play to start, especially when, like he was talking about there, when the goals, that part of your offensive attack you haven't quite figured out and nailed down yet. Early on in the season, you have to make sure you're defensively sound, and that's what I'm going to look for first out of Nashville SC beginning against Atlanta United on February 29th.
I mean, I think there's a somewhat universal rule with franchise, expansion franchises, that you start with trying to be defensively sound.
Yep.
Certainly saw that with the hockey franchise here, right, for a long time.
Absolutely.
And you know, then you hope you can develop on the other side of the field.
When we come back, Adam Schefter had some interesting comments about Tom Brady and maybe his future with the Tennessee Titans. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumLoan.com. This is Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad on ESPN 102.5 The Game.